An Osho Talk. The great Zen master, Tahui, reflections on the transformation of an intellectual to enlightenment. Number 20.
Power. The senses are manifestations of one's own mind. If you can understand thoroughly like this, then it's called the knowledge that there's neither self nor others. Heaven and hell are nowhere else but in the heart of the person. As soon as you become aware of gradually conserving power, in the midst of the afflictions of daily activities, this is how a person achieves Buddhahood. When you see it as it really is, practice according to reality and act according to reality. Only if you arrive at this stage can you say there is no heaven or hell and such things. Yong Chia said, "There are neither humans nor Buddhas. The universe is like a bubble in the ocean. All the sages are like flashes of lightning." If he hadn't gotten to this stage, how could Yong Chia have said this? But with these words, those who misunderstand are many. Feelings and affliction. It is precisely when afflicted that you should carefully investigate and inquire where the affliction arises from. If you cannot get to the bottom of its origination, then where does the one who is afflicted right now come from? Right when you're afflicted, is it existent or non-existent? Empty or real? Keep investigating until your mind has nowhere to go. If you want to think, then think. If you want to cry, then cry. Just keep on crying and thinking. When you arouse yourself to the point where the habit energy of love and affection within the storehouse consciousness is exhausted, then naturally it's like water being returned to water, giving you back your original being without affliction, without thoughts, without sorrow or joy. Having entered the world, leave the world completely. Is there such a thing as a father who is not troubled when his son dies? If you try to suppress such sentiments forcibly, not daring to cry or think about it, then this is deliberately going against the natural pattern, denying your inherent nature. It's like raising a sound to stop an echo, or pouring on oil to put out a fire.
Tahui. The man who has started searching has disappeared in the search. Now one who is speaking is no more the old Tahui. He is discontinuous. The old is gone and the new is born. Whatever he is saying now has a totally different significance. It is not coming out of his mind. It is coming out of his experience. And one of the most significant experiences is power. Power not over others, but simply a tremendous energy arising in you from the very core of your being. It is not that you are powerful over others. It is simply that you are powerful. The power that is over others can be taken away. It is dependent on others. It is not yours. You are simply hiding your impotence. Every politician in the world is psychologically sick. His sickness is a deep inferiority complex, a deep impotence. Now there are only two ways to get out of this state of impotence. The cheapest and the simplest is to become powerful over others. But that is an illusory experience. Certainly cheap, but not real. The real power comes only with the experience of your own being. That's where politics and religion separate. Their inquiry is basically the same. The search for power. But politics chooses the cheapest and the plastic way of attaining power, and religion goes in search of the authentic and the real and your own independent, absolutely rooted in your own being, This experience of power can be saved. If you are close to the man of power, and you are not afraid of opening up, you will immediately see a great flux, a great flow entering into your being, as if a flame has jumped from one lamp to another lamp. It has been called in the tradition of Zen as the transmission of the lamp. It is transmission of power. It is a very strange experience. One of the disciples of Gurdjieff perhaps the longest to be related with him was Bennett. He has found Gurdjieff in the refugees in Constantinople after the Russian Revolution. In Russian Revolution, Gurdjieff escaped out of Russia. There was every danger, particularly from the communists, who don't believe in any spirituality, who don't believe that man has something eternal in him. And that was Gurdjieff's lifelong work. He knew that remaining in Russia was absolutely dangerous for his life. And his disciples who were around him, they also persuaded him to escape in time. There was a chaos all over the country. The Tsar and his government has failed, collapsed. The communist has not been able yet to establish order and peace. Everything was in a chaos. The whole bureaucracy was disrupted. That was the time when all the people who wanted to get out of Russia had the opportunity. Gurdjieff landed in Constantinople in a refugee camp where thousands of Russians were there, homeless. Bennett discovered him in the refugee camp in Constantinople. That is, for the first time, the world came to know about Gurdjieff. He was in the army. He helped Gurdjieff to reach to Paris. And as long as he was able to manage, he will come and live with Gurdjieff. He remembers in his autobiography something concerning power. He had come utterly tired. To see Gurdjieff. And he was feeling for a few days as if he is going to die. As if all power to resist sickness has disappeared. He was pale, weak, and he had come just to see him for the last time, thinking that I will not be able to see him again. When he entered Gurdjieff's room, Gurdjieff said, "What has happened to you, Bennett? This is not time for you to die." And he put his hand on his head. And Bennett could not believe a great energy started flowing from his hand in his body. He became again young just within minutes. He opened his eyes. He could not believe. He looked at his hands. All his paleness has disappeared. There was a feeling of rejuvenation, almost a rebirth. But when he looked at Gurdjieff, he could not believe. He had become pale. He had never seen him so weak. And he could see that what has happened, he has given himself, his life, his force, his energy to him. Gurdjieff said, "Don't be worried. It will take just 10 minutes for me to be refilled." And he went into the bathroom, and after 10 minutes when he came, he was just the same, full of energy. Bennett wanted to know more about what has transpired. Gurdjieff said, "If you go on practicing the discipline that I have given to you, one day you will see it yourself, that everybody has an inexhaustible source of power. It was an urgent situation, emergency, that I poured myself. Otherwise, your death was certain. But I knew that it is almost just like a well. You can take the water out. If you do it quickly, the well may become empty. But just for a few minutes, because many currents are coming in and filling the well again, soon it will be full again. And you needed so much that I could not give you slowly. I had to pour myself totally. You all have that power. It has nothing to do with anybody else. It has to do something with your roots in existence. And the more you become aware of your roots in existence, the more powerful you become. This power has no equivalent in any other sources of energy. It is not material. It is not electrical. It is not atomic. It is not nuclear. It is spiritual. It is a totally different dimension, which science has not yet even touched. But all the mystics of the world have lived into it, have danced into it, and have given to their disciples without any restraint, because the more you give it, the more existence brings to you from the invisible sources. Man is just like a tree. As the tree has roots in the earth which you don't see, man has roots in existence which are invisible. Once you become aware of your innermost center, at the very time, simultaneously, you become aware of your immense power. And this power can never do any harm to anybody. This power can be used only as a blessing. Tahui is talking about this power. The senses are manifestations of one's own mind. In other words, in fact, the mind and the senses are one phenomenon. Senses are doors of the mind, connecting it with the world. Eyes, ears, nose, hands, the whole body, all your six senses are nothing but your six connections with existence. Mind goes on gathering information, energy, nourishment from all these senses. Mind is only your seventh sense and nothing else, or in other words, the central pool from every sense, whatever comes falls into the mind. The senses are manifestations of one's own mind. If you can understand thoroughly like this, then it is called the knowledge that there is neither self nor others. If you can become aware of your mind, its senses, and be just a watcher, two things will disappear, the self and the other selves, I and thou. One of the great Jewish thinkers of our age, Martin Buber, has worked his whole life only on one theme. His theme was dialogue. And his central and the most essential book about it is I and thou. He says the ultimate experience is a dialogue between I and thou. He is very articulate, tremendously intelligent, certainly one of the greatest geniuses of this age. But he is not a mystic. He is still talking in terms of the duality, I and thou. What he is proposing is beautiful, that there should be a dialogue right now. Even if you love somebody, there is no dialogue. There is continuous conflict, an effort to dominate, not an effort to understand each other. I know one of my friends, he is a professor. His doctors are tired, his wife his children, everybody is tired because of his drinking. And the doctor came to me . He said, "We have tried every possible way, but your friend simply seems to be incapable of dropping his habit of drinking. He is willing to die, but not to drop drinking." So I went to see him, and before I could see him, because he was in his bathroom, his wife told me that just the other day, I read in the newspaper, all harms that happen to drunkards. So I went in the bedroom, because he was still having a hangover. So I shook him and told him that, "Look, how many dangers are possible to drunkards? How many things in the body can go wrong?" He listened. And I was happy, because he said, "Enough is enough. I will stop it from tomorrow." And from tomorrow he stopped purchasing the newspaper. But drinking continues. Why bother about such newspapers? Who create trouble? What kind of dialogue is possible? Nobody seems to listen to anybody else. Everybody is talking. But everybody is having a monologue. So his thesis has an importance of its own, that mankind will be better if people could come to an understanding, to see the other's point of view, to stand in his shoes. That is the only possibility of having a peaceful world. But he does not understand that even a dialogue, although a beautiful thing in itself, is not going to bring the peace in the world. Only one thing can bring the peace in the world, and that is when I and you, the self and other selves, all disappear. And a feeling arises of oneness, of one consciousness, of one being. And it can arise because it is the reality. If you can understand thoroughly like this, then it is called the knowledge that there is neither self nor others. Heaven and hell are nowhere else but in the heart of the person. Because we are thinking ourselves as separate from everybody else, we have created a hell. If we can start having a harmony, a deep accord with each other, this very earth is the lotus paradise. As soon as you become aware of gradually conserving power in the midst of the afflictions of daily activities, this is how a person achieves Buddhahood. And because you are continuously in conflict with others, you are losing your power. If all conflicts disappear, that means if you understand and feel the oneness with existence, then you will start conserving your power without any effort, because there is nobody else to fight with. There is no way to destroy your power into unnecessary fights. You will conserve so much power that even if you are involved in day-to-day activities of life, you will attain to Buddhahood wherever you are. This is a tremendous insight of Tao Hui. Now he is not talking from the mind. Now he is saying things which only a man of experience can say. When you see it as it really is, practice according to reality and act according to reality. This is where the man of authentic experience differs from your so-called moralists, Puritans, social servants, religious leaders. The man of experience has no Ten Commandments. He does not have any fixed moral concept. He has no ready-made ideas and ideals about good and bad, about right and wrong. He simply acts according to the harmonious reality. He does not fall in discord with it. That's all he has to do. He remains alert not to fall in discord. Remain always in accord, in tune with reality. and you are right. The moment you are out of tune with reality, you are wrong. This is a very different approach towards morality. It does not say, thou should not do this, thou should do this. There are no shoulds and should nots. A very simple principle. Thou should not fall in discord with reality. Be in tune with it. And you will be automatically on the right path. When you see it as it really is, practice according to reality. Have you ever thought about the word according? That it comes from accord? I don't think. You may have even thought about it, that according comes from akar. Practice according to reality means remain in accord with reality. And act according to reality. Just remember one thing, to be in accord with existence. And your life will be a rejoicing, a blissful ecstasy, a continuous dance. Your life will become an eternal spring. Only if you arrive at this stage can you say there is no heaven or hell and such things. Jung Chia said, there are neither humans nor Buddhas. The universe is like a bubble in the ocean. All the sages are like flashes of lightning. If he had not gotten to this stage, how could Jung Chia have said this? But with these words, those who misunderstand are many. To understand a man like Jung Chia, who was the master of Taohui, it is always easy to misunderstand a man like Jung Chia. It is difficult, almost impossible to understand him. Because for understanding, the basic ground is missing. You don't have any experience of what he is saying. And whatever your ways of understanding are being contradicted by his statements. He is saying there are neither humans nor Buddhas. ordinarily we understand people who are asleep are human beings, and people who are awake are the Buddhas. But young Chia is saying something even greater. He is saying there are no humans, no Buddhas, but only forms of awareness. One form we call human, another form we call the Buddha. But the reality is of the same energy, the same power, the same awareness. You can make from the same mud many, many toys of different shapes. But the reality within them is simply one. They are all mud. This whole existence consists only of consciousness. Even rocks are nothing but condensed, fast asleep, snoring Buddhas. If you listen closely, you may hear their snore. They are really asleep. So deeply asleep that you cannot wake them. In a state of coma. But essentially there is no difference. Essentially we are made of the same stuff. Whether you are a human being, or a rock, or a tree, or a Buddha, these are only forms. A man of ultimate awakening will know that all forms are just forms and nothing more. The reality within them is simply one and the same. But such people like young Chia are bound to be misunderstood. Hence, Tahui says, but with these words, those who misunderstand are many. How can you accept that a rock and a Buddha are no more different? In fact, after Gautama Buddha died, 300 years afterwards, the first statue of Gautama Buddha was made. And the artist, the sculptor who made it especially with pure white marble, and asked why he has chosen white marble, because there are many other colors of marble and many other kinds of stones. He said, the white marble and Gautam Buddha sitting in his silence have some similarities. The same beauty, the same softness, the same grace. And watching to certain great statues, it seems as if the statue is going to open its eyes any moment. In Ajanta, the Buddhist monks have done something absolutely miraculous. They have carved the whole mountain, made great caves. Few caves are as big as this auditorium. Very easily 500 people can sit in meditation in one cave. And each cave has a statue of Buddha. The last cave has the statue of Buddha when he lied down and was ready to move into eternal sleep. It is a beautiful statue of Buddha lying down, so alive that one feels any moment he is going to wake up. The first man who made the first statue has made the remark that there is something very similar in the marble, because in its softness, in its beauty, something of Gautam Buddha's qualities are present. Perhaps he was not himself an enlightened being, otherwise he could have said that in the statue Gautam Buddha is fast asleep, and in Gautam Buddha the statue has awakened. That is the only difference, not much of a difference. But this kind of mystical statement can be understood only if you start having some experiences. If you start having some moments of accord with reality, of deep harmony and oneness, then not only these statements, but millions more will become immediately clear to you. I have spoken on hundreds of mystics, and you will be surprised that I have never read those people before. For example, this Tahui, I don't know what he is going to say tomorrow. I don't know how he is going to end up. I simply go on responding to his statements that are presented to me. But I don't have to read Tahui and many other supporting material on his life, his works, his teachings. That's what a scholar will do. He will study everything possibly available about Tahui. My approach is that of a mystic, not of a scholar. And this is a very strange approach, because nobody else before me has ever done that. It is unprecedented. Mystics don't care about other mystics. They have come home, now they want to move into eternal sleep, why bother? Scholars who don't have any experience, they are left to work on the meanings of the statements, of the actions of the mystics. And these poor scholars have nothing but libraries, other books, but they don't have any experience of their own. So whatever they do, howsoever clever, howsoever articulate, it remains fundamentally wrong. Only a mystic has the right to say anything about another mystic. And I have been able to talk on hundreds of mystics without any difficulty. For the simple reason that it is my own experience. And I respect my experience, that if I find some mystic committing a mistake in his statements, or perhaps the mistake is committed by the people who recorded them, then I don't leave anybody. It doesn't matter who he is. I have a criterion my own. I judge it on my criterion. And if it is not 24 karat gold, then I say so. It hurts many people. But they don't see that one's commitment should be about the truth, not about personalities. Everything can be sacrificed. All the saints and all the mystics can be sacrificed, but not the truth. It is precisely when afflicted that you should carefully investigate and inquire where the affliction arises from. Now he is coming more and more close to devices of meditation. This is one of the devices. You are feeling sad or angry. He is telling you can make it a meditation. Don't fight it. Don't try to distract your mind into something else. Don't go to see a movie because you are feeling very sad. Don't try to repress your feeling. It is a great opportunity for meditation. Just watch from where the anger arises. Just go to the very roots. Just go to the very roots from where the sadness is coming. And the greatest surprise is that they don't have any roots. So when you look for their roots, by that time they start disappearing. Seeing that this man is strange, he is looking at the roots. And those afflictions, emotions, sentiments, feelings, none of them have any roots. They are just clouds without any roots surrounding your mind. And if you start looking for roots, they start dispersing that this is not the right man. He is not going to be affected by us. He is a little strange. Here we are and he is looking for the roots. Rather than being sad, rather than being angry, rather than being miserable, he is searching for the roots. Every sentiment, every emotion, every feeling will disappear if you look for the roots. If your awareness goes that deep in search, then that certain emotion will be gone. And the sky of your inner being will be absolutely clear and clean. Tahui has given you a simple meditation. Just try it. And you will be amazed. If you cannot get to the bottom of its origination, then where does the one who is afflicted right now come from? Perhaps you may not be able to remain unaffected and just be a pure scientific investigator, you may become affected. Then you cannot find the very bottom from where these clouds are arising. Then Tauhi suggests another thing. Then if you cannot find that, you try to find who is this fellow who is becoming miserable. Just turn your awareness and focus it instead on the misery or anger, on the person who is becoming angry. Another device the method is the same, just the object changes. And the purpose is the same. The moment you turn to look at who is this fellow, who is this guy who is becoming angry, you cannot do both the things because you are the guy. Either you can be angry or you can look for who is the guy. You cannot do both things together. Either you can be angry or you can be in search who is angry. And if you are in the search, you will not find the God. Again the sky is clean and clear. What you do is not the question. The question is that mind should come again and again to a point of utter silence and nothingness. Right when you are afflicted, is it existent or non-existent, empty or real? Just he is giving you different devices similar to each other. You are angry, he is saying, now become aware whether this anger is real or you are just acting. Is it existent or non-existent? The device is to create a dislocation, a discontinuity between you and the anger. Is the anger real? Are you really angry? You have never asked these things. When you are angry, you become so involved, so impressed that you lose yourself in anger. If you start asking, is this anger real? The purpose of this question is to keep a little distance. Only then you can see whether it is real or not. From every aspect, this corner and that corner, from the behind and from the front, is this anger real? But anger cannot remain there if you are looking from all around. Anger can remain only there if you are absent. This looking for anger's reality makes you present, alert and aware, and that's the end of the whole game. The anger starts like a smoke disappearing. So whatever method has to be followed, whatever feels right to you. Or you can try all the methods in different times, because the whole day there are problems. Sometimes you are miserable, sometimes you are angry, sometimes you are sad, sometimes you are feeling dull, sometimes you are feeling meaningless, sometimes you are feeling in great love, and sometimes in great hate. You are such a marketplace. And the shops remain open 24 hours, day in, day out. So it is a great opportunity. Use all the methods for different things. And you can devise your own methods. The only thing to be remembered is that you should create a distance between the emotion, the feeling, and you. And just use any method of creating distance. And you will be amazed that this anger has tortured you so much, and it simply disappears because you start looking for its roots, or you start looking for the person who is angry. Or you start looking at all the aspects of the anger, you forget all about the person towards your anger was arrowed. Your whole attention is focused now on the reality or unreality of anger itself. And these are absolutely experienced, valid methods of transforming your mind into no mind. Keep investigating until your mind has nowhere to go. If you want to think, then think. If you want to cry, then cry. Just keep on crying and keep on thinking. When you can arouse yourself to the point where the habit energy of love and affection within the storehouse consciousness is exhausted, then naturally it is like water being returned to water, giving you back your original being. In many methods that I have devised, when I used to take camps myself, there was one method that every afternoon all the participants in the camp used to gather, sit, and everybody was allowed to do whatsoever he wants. No restriction. Just he has not to interfere into anybody else's work. Whatever he wants to say, he can say. If he wants to cry, he can cry. If he wants to laugh, he can laugh. And 1,000 people. And it was such a hilarious scene. That people you could have never thought, serious people, doing such a stupid thing. Somebody is making faces, pulling out his tongue as far as he can, and you know that this man is a police commissioner. One man I cannot forget because he used to sit in front of me every day. And he was a very rich man of Ahmedabad. And because his whole business is just continuously on the phone, share market. So whenever this 1 hour meditation will begin, just within 2-3 minutes, he will take up the phone. He will start moving the numbers. Hello! And he will, it looked from his face that he is getting the answers. Purchase it. And this will continue for 1 hour. And he is again phoning to this, to that. And once in a while he will look at me and smile. That's the nonsense I am doing. But I will have to keep absolutely serious. I never smile at him, so he will again start falling dead. Nobody is taking note. Everybody is engaged in his own work. 1,000 people doing so many things. These things were continuously going in their mind. This was a great chance for them to bring them out. It was such a drama. Janti Bhai used to be the in charge of the camp in Mount Abu. And one of his closest friends first became naked. That was a surprise. Janti Bhai was standing by my side. He could not believe that man was a very serious man, very rich. And what he is doing before 1,000 people. And then the car in which I had come to the place, it was Janti Bhai's car. He started pushing that car and we were on the mountains and just ahead there was a deep 1,000-foot ditch. And he was pushing the car naked. Janti Bhai asked me, what has to be done? He is going to destroy the car. And I have never thought that this man is against my car. And we are close friends, so I told you, push it from the other side, otherwise he is going to. So he was preventing the car, and his friend was jumping and shouting that, "Get out of my way. I have always hated this car." Because he was not having an imported car, and this was an imported car, and Janti Bhai was keeping it for me, because I was continuously coming to Mount Abu 3-4 times a year. So he was keeping that car just for me, and he must be inside feeling jealous that he does not have an imported car. And then few people, seeing the situation, rushed to help. And when he saw that so many people are preventing, just out of protest, he climbed a tree in front of me, naked, on top of the tree, and he started moving the tree. Every danger was that he will fall over 1,000 people with the tree. Janti Bhai asked me, "What has to be done now?" I said, "He is your friend. I said, let him do now, don't be worried. Just remove people to this side and that side and let him do whatever he is doing. Now he is not destroying the car. At the most he will have multiple fractures." And as people moved, he also stopped. Silently he sat on the tree. After the meditation was over, he was still sitting on the tree. Janti Bhai said, "Now, get down, the meditation is over." As if he woke up from his sleep, he looked all around that he is naked. He jumped out of the tree, rushed to his clothes. He said, "What happened to me?" In the night he came to see me and he said, "This was a very dangerous meditation. I could have killed myself or somebody else. I could have destroyed the car. And I am a great friend of Janti Bhai, and I have never thought. But certainly there must have been this idea in me. I hated the idea that you come in his car always, and I hated the idea that he has got an imported car. But it was not at all conscious in me. And what I was doing on the tree, I must be carrying so much violence in me. I wanted to kill people. That meditation was immensely helpful. It relaxed people in 1 hour so much that people told me that it seems a heavy load from the head has disappeared. We were not aware what we have been carrying in the mind. but becoming aware of it. There was no other way except an uninhibited expression. It was only a small experiment, and I told people that you continue it. Soon you will come to many more things. And one day you will come to a point where all is exhausted. Remember only not to interfere with anybody. Don't be destructive. Say anything you want to say, shout, abuse, whatever you want. And exhaust all that you have been collecting. But this is a strange world. The government of Rajasthan passed a resolution in their assembly that I cannot have camps in Mount Abu, because they heard all these things are happening there. People who are perfectly right almost become mad, start doing any kinds of things. Now these politicians in the assemblies don't have any idea of human mind, its inhibitions, and how to exhaust them, how to burn them. I had to stop that meditation. Because otherwise they were not going to allow me to have camps in Mount Abu. What Tahui is saying is exactly what my meditation was. If you want to think, then think. If you want to cry, then cry. Just keep on crying and thinking. When you can arouse yourself to the point where the habit energy of love and affection within the storehouse consciousness, that's something which Western psychology has not yet become aware. This storehouse consciousness, it is just like a basement of your mind. In Sanskrit, the name is Alay Vigyan. The house where things that you want to do but you cannot because of social conditions, culture, civilization, you go on throwing in the basement. But they go on collecting there. And they affect your actions, your life, very indirectly. Directly they cannot face you. Directly you have forced them into darkness. But from the dark side, they go on influencing your behavior. It is dangerous to keep all those inhibitions inside you. They are dangerous. It is possible that these are the things that come to a climax and the person goes insane. Insanity is nothing but all these suppressions coming to a point that you cannot control them anymore. But madness is acceptable. Meditation is not. And meditation is the only way to make you absolutely sane. With no possibility of insanity anywhere remaining within you. This storehouse consciousness, once exhausted, you will feel so clean, so fresh, as if you have just taken an inner shower. Then naturally it is like water being returned to water, giving you back your original being, without affliction, without thoughts, without sorrow or joy. Having entered the world, leave the world completely. Tao Hui is saying, you have entered the world, don't leave it incompletely, otherwise you will have to enter again. This is the law of reincarnation. It is one of the great contributions of Eastern mystics. Complete your life. And your life completes only with enlightenment. After that, there is no birth, no death. But if you leave this world incompletely, you will have to come back. Again and again. Millions of times you have come back. How many more times you are going to do the same routine job? Is there such a thing as a father who is not troubled when his son dies? If you try to suppress such sentiments forcibly, not daring to cry or think about it, then this is deliberately going against the natural pattern, denying your inherent nature. It is like raising a sound to stop an echo, or pouring on oil to put out a fire. He is absolutely in agreement with my idea that nothing should be repressed, everything should be expressed. If you feel like crying, cry. There is no harm in it. It is absolutely in accord with nature. If you feel like doing anything that is arising in you with a great urge, do it. Because once done, you are freed from it. And if each moment we go on doing everything naturally, we don't accumulate in the storehouse of consciousness any rubbish, any crap. And if your consciousness is clean, pure, innocent, the moment is not far away when you will explode into a luminous splendor. That's what is known as enlightenment or awakening or self-realization.